Discovery's four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0, 0.
Hello, world, and welcome to the 1 year anniversary of the Gadget Cast. My name is Gregory McFadden, joined always by my co-host Travis MCP.
Nice to be in orbit.
Space travel.
It's all about that space travel. Yeah, we were just, ironically, right before we got started on the beforecast here on YouTube, we're trying to figure out if we've been doing this for a year. And we are, I think, 2 days away from a year. So we were asking the chat, do you round down or round up? In other words, is this the 1 year anniversary episode or is it next week? Here's the plus. If we wait till next week and call it next week's episode, we can get some guests. So, you know, maybe we do that.
Okay.
Maybe we make it like a big blow.
You know, I said it was our 1 year anniversary. Fooled ya. You know, it's actually, you know, you have to go around the sun. So we haven't gone around the sun yet. We haven't completed our space travel journey around the sun. So it was a little bit of fake news to say that this was our 1 year anniversary, but I just got excited. I jumped the gun on this. But next show will be the official 1 year anniversary. We probably should see if we could get a couple guests. I imagine a lot of the guests we'd want to book are going to be so busy, though. Like, is the everyday dad really going to come on for a 1 year anniversary? We should get like,
I mean,
30.
He's here right now. He's literally in chat. So is Renee. Like, I think
there's some
obvious people.
Gary's like hiring people. He has like social media people. Am I really interacting with Gary or am I interacting with the fake Gary? You know, I really don't know. Gary like always responds to me and likes things, responds with GIFs. I feel like no one man could be on top of that. So I feel like I'm talking to fake Gary now. And it's kind of, you know, fake. Is there a fake Greg on Twitter? I don't know. Do I have a giant crew behind me, keeping me afloat, propping me up? Probably, because I don't know how I do it by myself. We need Willie Do on the show for the 1 year. I'm going to
100%.
I'm going to send a tweet and an email. I'm going to try and make it happen. I'm going to try.
I think that'd be cool. That'd be great. I think bringing him in would be amazeballs.
Yeah,
let's put some feelers out for the 1 year anniversary episode next week. Let's see who we can get on.
I saw Renee Ritchie, I saw Gary, obviously. If you are, you know, if you make content and you want to be on the anniversary show, I could contact you, or you could like DM me and go, I'd love to be on, which would be.
And let's be honest, like if you've been a guest on, you probably should come back if you can, you know. Yeah. So we'll talk about all the people and see if who can come on. That'd be amazeballs. Yeah, Duke Miami for sure needs to come on.
Yeah. Well, Steven says we should get Tim Cook. So, Travis, why don't you go ahead and, you know, fire up that email? Why don't you work that charisma?
Well, you know, the funny thing is we do have access to his phone number. So.
Yeah.
We could call. I'm not going to do that, though.
Right.
Thank you, Renee, for the super chat. Thank you, Everyday Dad, for the super chat earlier. And I think Gabriel T. Black gave the super chat earlier. Appreciate all y'all. Appreciate you. Yeah. All right. So 1 year we've been doing this. It didn't seem like it. The fact that you brought it up was a little surprising. Time goes so fast. Mm. All the things we used to talk about. I think the very first episode we talked something about like Microsoft and stuff. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Who's talking about them anymore?
I know, right? I mean, what's happening to their duo? Little duo is going on. And since the time of course, we weren't here last week because people were asking if we were here last week. We were not. Last week, a lot of things happened. A lot of pieces of hardware and all that stuff. Yeah, we would love to get iJustine. If she would be willing to come on, that'd be awesome. But we don't know how to get her. Thank you for taking us so lit for the $10 super chat. There are a couple devices that have been announced since our last show. So there's the Pixel 5, which we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. S20 FE, which I should have mine tomorrow. I don't know why everyone got theirs way far in advance of mine. Mm. And then, of course, we got our Folds, which I think we had last time as well.
We did.
But let's talk about the Pixel 5 and Galaxy 20 FE because, interestingly, they're priced the same. However, for me, they're not even for the same person.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like, they're not for the same consumer for many reasons. Number one, let's get the similarities. They are both 5G. That's great. They are both Android phones. That's awesome. But, I mean, the similarities start to divide very shortly after that. Number one, the Pixel is a lesser processor. I mean, if you really want to you know, really want to split hairs here. Obviously it is. Now, does that matter in every day? I think no. I think I've shown that even on my channel that it doesn't usually make any kind of difference. However, if you're paying $700, you want the best. I mean, that might be all the reason you need. If you're paying $700, which, by the way, we can talk about price in a minute. Why would I take a lesser processor? Period. End of story. So there's number one. Number two. We assume that the Pixel will have better photography than the S20 FE, but we don't really know by how much, right? So, A, the S20 FE takes fine pictures. You can see some of them out there already. When I get mine, I'll take all the pictures and everything. It'll be fine. Plus, you can sideload Gcam and make it look darn near the same as a Pixel phone. Now, some people might go, it's not the same. It's close enough, nerd. and then, I'm sorry, people get on my nerves with this.
Travis now, just insulted our entire audience. I think most of our audience might identify as nerd.
Our audience are geeks. They're not nerds. Big difference.
Oh, okay.
Big difference. Okay. I mean, we're all geeks here. And then finally, I think, and probably the biggest thing, now the software will be completely different. So while they're both sitting on the same type of Google Android, the reality is Android on Google Pixel has some really cool features that just never come to regular Android phones, like the call screening and all that really cool like AI stuff that Google always shows off. And that is a really cool differentiator. But when so I tweeted out like, the Pixel 5 seems like a good deal at $700 until you realize the FE exists. And then someone was like, well, the Pixel's better because of this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, here's the thing. The Pixel isn't, even on many levels, isn't even on the same like level. It's not going to sell as many as the 20 FE. It's just not. Not for the reason that it's like, it's not as good as a phone because of the processor. It has nothing to do with that. Number one, you go to most carriers' websites, it's not on there. It's on Verizon's, but I couldn't find it anywhere else. The FE is on every single provider's website, all the major providers here in the U.S., I'm sure most overseas as well. So that right there is a huge deal. Because as much as we buy stuff online, the reality is most people go into a store, especially if their contract's up, to go get their phone, right? So the option is there. The Pixel 5 is not an option unless you're at Verizon, and I don't even know how often they keep Pixels in stock there. Now, the Pixel is going to be a great phone. I'm not saying it's not going to be a great phone. But that alone makes it very difficult for you to ever say that it's this phone for everyone and it should kick out the FE. It won't. It won't. First of all, the name brand, Samsung. You know a Samsung phone. You might know that Google has something to do with smartphones, but there's a tremendous amount of people out there who have never heard what a damn Pixel is. Walk down the street, say, you got a Google Pixel? And you're going to get arrested. I don't know. What do you think, Greg? I've just been blabbering.
No, I like your blabbering. I feel like you've got the insight on it. Listen, it's an interesting phone because number one, I feel like Samsung's strategy's just messed up here. I feel like the S20 FE looks like a legitimately good phone. I love all the different colors and stuff. That doesn't really matter. But the specs-wise, price-wise, it seems to nail everything you'd want. And I just can't imagine the marketing behind it. I feel like for next year, Samsung should make like this FE type device, like the S21. And then you have the premium tiers on top of it, right? The people who want the $1,000 phone are going to get the Plus Ultra editions, right? But I feel like making your flagship phone, pricing it at that $750-ish or whatever, $699 price range, That's something that Apple's kind of doing, and they kind of figured it out quick. Oh, let's, you know what? We released the XR. Why don't we call it the 11? And even though it's the lesser phone, we'll call that one the Pro model. So the strategy of marketing that completely shifted. I feel like Samsung should take the same approach because for all purposes, it seems like the regular S20 line didn't sell well, which makes sense. It was a very expensive phone. And there were a lot of people that were mad about the price. With Google, they're taking that approach. They're calling it the Pixel 5, right? This is their flagship phone. Now, people like me and you can look at it and go, well, is it really flagship level? It's kind of more of a budget-oriented device on some of the specs, looking at the processor. Obviously, like you said, it's probably going to have best-in-class camera, but maybe the Galaxy has a better video camera, and that edges it out above the Pixel. We know Pixel devices in the past, their video hasn't been anything to write home about. But you know, I think that the interesting thing to me isn't even this Pixel 5. It was an interesting phone when they announced it. I think they listened to a lot of the feedback that people had with the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL, that being that they kind of wasted their time on that Project Soli technology. I don't think many people liked it. It was kind of very finicky. And a lot of people were asking from Google, we just kind of want like these Nexus devices that used to make that were really good on software, came in at a really good price point, and just delivered on that value. I feel like maybe this isn't even that phone yet. Like it's kind of, it kind of takes a while to get that all into motion. But this is the beginning of Google doing that, especially with the 4A and now with the 4A 5G. By the way, I think that's, you know, we don't have it listed here as a topic, but the 4A 5G versus the 5G is interesting because it's a bigger display. It's 6.2 inches and they both have like the same processor and camera. And I would laugh at like the 4A 5G before because I was like, it's just going to be a 4A with 5G. Who wants that, right? We know that 5G really isn't ready yet. Especially for most people. So I was kind of surprised that they actually put more effort into that phone. They made it a bigger device. They differentiated it from the 4A, put in the same processor as the Pixel 5, has a headphone jack, which a lot of people are sticklers for. And I think like the only major downside is it's a plastic body as opposed to some of these more premium materials. So I don't know. I really don't know what to think. I'm glad to see both of these devices. I feel like people were missing that kind of mid-range phone from Samsung this year. And Google just completely failed at it last year with the 4. So I'm very interested to see what these phones do.
Yeah, it's Renee's making a good point in the chat about how essentially Google doesn't have like a unified vision, which I think was proven last year when John Prosser was talking about how there were two completely different teams like competing for the design of the Pixel 3 or whatever it was. And you're right. I think it is kind of weird that these are almost too close, but the price is significant enough that you look at them and you go, well, what am I getting for the extra, what is it, $200 or $100, whatever it is? What am I getting for that? And the answer is very difficult. And the minute that you can't easily explain what the difference is the minute you lose. I just think that they came out with a great idea with the Pixel 4a. The Pixel 4a 5G is, you know, giving you that 5G. I don't know that it gives you anything more than that.
It does. It gives you a processor upgrade, a bigger display, a bigger battery.
There's than the 4A?
Yeah. It's actually more than just 5G. So it actually looks like a pretty compelling phone. It has the same processor as the Pixel 5 and the same camera system, too. And Renee, I didn't mention that before. Renee is completely right. I'm giving praise to the Pixel 5 in a way, but it's things that, like, you had a team last year tell us all about this Project Soli and how it was going to change the world. You had a team out there putting out a camera and saying, well, zoom is way more important than ultra wide. And within a year, you have a complete reversal on so many of these different ideas and technologies. It just feels like there's no leadership there. And that's kind of been Google's problem forever. They put things out there, they see what sticks, and they're just as likely to kill a product, which is why when you see a lot of these different concepts coming out by Google, you just don't know if they have any lasting ability to stay there, which is why, like, what if you really bought into that vision last year and you bought a Pixel 4 and you were trying to make those hand gestures work and you invested so much time into that? Well, now there's no future in that gesture system. Or if you like really like the zoom lens, like it really is weird how Google, I don't know, they just kill products way too quickly. They don't give it enough time. What was that awful tablet they released? Was it the Pixel tablet or the Chromebook C or something like that?
Yeah.
Like that's like dead. I don't know what they're doing with their Chromebook products now. They released the Chromebook Go. It was okay for a Chromebook, probably too expensive for what it needed to be. And I feel like that was a reversal of their more premium Chromebook that they released before it. So I feel like Google kind of doesn't know which direction to go sometimes. It looks like they're finding their direction. Like I said, I don't have the Pixel 5. I can't really say one way or the other. But at least it looks like they're listening and maybe they can come up with a better strategy. But you do need someone at the top making these decisions and leading to a vision. And that's what Google seems to be lacking right now.
Yeah, so I'll real quick go over the difference between the Pixel 5 and Pixel 4 A with 5G. So the Pixel 5 has a 6-inch OLED display. The Pixel 4 A with 5G has a 6.2, as we talked about before. The Pixel 5 does have a 90 hertz refresh rate with a 60 on the 4 A 5G. Resolution is exactly the same. The battery is slightly bigger on the 5 at 4,080 milliamp hours versus 3,885. That's going to be negligible.
And with same the 90 hertz, it'll probably go just as fast.
Yeah, actually, yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Unless they're doing that whole thing with the brightness or the trickery from last year.
I hope not.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, yeah. Front and rear cameras are the same. Night sight, all that stuff's the same. RAM is a little bit different. 8 gigs for Pixel 5, 6 for the Pixel 4a 5G. Same processors, same storage. Yeah. Again, the 3.5 millimeter jack is only on the 4a 5G. And, of course, a $200 difference now. Water resistance and wireless charging on the 5, but not the 4A. But, you know, at some point, for $200, you got to think, is it worth $200 to have wireless charging and 90 hertz screens? And at that point, if you're spending that much, do I even want a Pixel anymore? If I'm paying $700, do I even want a Pixel anymore?
Yeah, yeah, it's tough. Now, I will give Google credit in one area. Again, we mentioned the cameras, which is why a lot of people like to pick Pixel. Some people like the software experience, too. I will say, the thing I am excited for the 5 is they're doing portrait mode photography with night mode. And yeah, that's something, I mean, Google's pretty good with portrait mode. I can think of some really nice looking pictures that I would like to take with that. So that's what I'm most excited to test out. I know they did some cinematic camera feature. I don't think their phones even shoot in 24 frames per second, which were people are making jokes about that. So I don't know how cinematic it's going to look. They do have some good camera features that other people aren't going to replicate. Camera is one of the most important features for anyone buying a phone today. And the 5, now I don't know what the 90 hertz is going to be, but it is a pretty big battery for a 6-inch display. So I'm hopeful for it. I think the price is better than last year. I think the direction is better than last year. I'm hopeful for it, but we'll see.
I think so.
I've been burned before.
The Pixel's a fine phone. I just think it's overpriced, and that's going to trigger some people, especially the Google fans. I think if it was $100 less, I would be very compelled. And then it's only $100 between the 4A 5G. But anyway, I think it's $100 too much. One of the main reasons I think that is because of the next phone, the S20 Fan Edition, which, again, mine will be here tomorrow, because they packed so, unlike what Samsung normally does, they packed so much into a good price. Normally, at least this year, if this year was any indication, they were just going for the high price stuff. $1,000 or more. You want something? You got to pay for it. But earlier this year, I reviewed the S10 Lite, called it one of my favorite Samsung phones I've reviewed. And it was a good priced phone. It had some great features. Didn't have the top of the line stuff, but it was doing really good. 855, big screen. It was fine, right? I liked it. This is really compelling because they're using a processor from this year. And they have made what essentially would be the equivalent of, you know, the low-end iPhone. But they did it well after the fact. So the S20 has been out for a while. The Notes have just been announced, and now the S20 FE. So it is a weird thing to almost go backwards. And they say they're going to do this every year. They're going to have fan editions every year, which is great, which means you can just wait. Now, the question will be, and a lot of people are asking me already, should you get that or the S20? Because the S20, especially if you go on like Swapper or Use or something, it's about the same price, sometimes even a little bit less, which I'll hopefully have that answer as soon as I get my hands on this FE. But I think it's interesting because, by the way, before this thing even was available, it was $100 off the FE. You would get it for, what was it, $600 or $500 or something on Amazon in pre-order. Like, it was already $100 off. So this is going to be one of the best values of the year on an Android side of things because you get all the cool Samsung stuff. I'm not sure if it comes with DeX and stuff. That's the things I got to pay attention to. But It's got everything else. Like from a spec standpoint, I keep expecting to go, oh yeah, probably doesn't have 120 hertz, or oh, it doesn't have this. It has everything. It has it all. It's 5G. Like what? I'm not used to that from Samsung. It kind of harkens back to the S10e from last year, but released much later. And if they continue to do this FE thing, this might be the ticket. I've been talking about all year that Samsung has been going the wrong direction by spending, you know, getting everything so expensive where people aren't spending a whole crap load of money. But I believe this is a winning strategy. And if they can continue this every year, I actually have a lot of hope that this is going to be the big hope for Samsung. So I'm excited to get mine tomorrow. From what everyone's showing on, you know, Twitter and everything else, it looks like it's going to be a great phone. So I'm really excited to get my hands on it.
Yeah, no, I think it looks like a very good phone. I just feel like from a marketing standpoint, next year, you said they're going to do fan editions every year, so I guess they're not going to take my advice. But I feel like call it the regular thing. You'll probably sell a lot more, and you'll probably, the same people who are going to buy the more expensive ones are probably going to buy the more expensive ones anyway.
But that's just me. Yeah, and that's the thing. But it's nice to be able to know that you can get like a really solid phone for a decent price. I don't think the flagship lovers are going to get the fan edition versions, but I think there's people that like want to be able to get that kind of higher end version, but don't want to spend $1,000, and $600 or $700 is not too bad, especially if you know are doing like a payment plan. It's actually not that bad. So I take my hat off to Samsung. I think they figured it out. I've been practically yelling at them all year about the expensive strategy, but I think I'm excited to get it. I think I'm going to be a fan of it. We'll see. But it's the strategy that needs to work, and we're going to see that from Apple this year with the iPhone 12 mini.
Yes, I'm so excited about that phone. But we could save iPhone stuff for probably the next couple of weeks.
I know, right? 100%.
Speaking of Samsung, I guess just because we kind of brushed over it last show, you've had a lot more time with the Fold. We're talking about cheap phones. Now let's talk about the most expensive phone.
Mm.
Any updated thoughts or opinions after using the Fold for a longer period of time?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot my full review hopefully today if I don't get too lazy. Like my motivation's been really all over the place the last couple of weeks. So either today or tomorrow, I'll be shooting it and releasing it probably this week. A lot of thoughts that I said in my initial 48-hour video still stand. There's some new thoughts. I will tell a quick story, though, which I thought was kind of interesting. I tweeted about it. At one point, I was like, okay, I can't, $2,000, I just can't get my hand wrapped around that. I'm going to return it. I just didn't think $2,000 made sense to me. I went to return it on the website, and Samsung offered me $100 to keep it, which I thought was interesting. From their standpoint, it makes sense because they won't be able to resell it as new. They will lose more than $100 on the transaction of me sending it back and them, you know, having to repackage it and go through all the things, right? Like they're going to lose more than $100. So it makes sense to offer something that may move the needle, to be honest, $100 probably wasn't enough to really move the needle for me, but it did. In the moment, I was like, okay, I did. I took it and I'm like, nah. Okay, so here I am. And I'm kind of glad I did because I've played around with a lot more. And like I said, my thoughts are coming. But that was a moment that kept it in my possession, that idea. Now, I don't think Apple does that. I don't think anyone else is doing that. I think it's interesting. And by the way, this wasn't just a Fold option. The reason I know that is because the wording of the offer, it said 10% of the purchase price or $100, whichever is less, which means they're doing this across multiple products. And I don't know which products are doing it across, but it's an offer that stands. And also another interesting thing, Samsung's trade-ins are really weird. The trade-in for the S9 to get this, they gave me $150. However, if I had traded in that same S9 for the S20 FE, which came out after this, I would have got $300 for it. Next. Figure what? But here's something else interesting. I decided to trade in my iPhone XR to get the FE, and Samsung was offering more of a trade-in than Apple. Apple was offering like $260, I think, for my iPhone XR, and Samsung was offering like $400. So I went with that. So it's a really interesting thing that Samsung's doing. They're being very aggressive to try to get their phones out there, even if it loses them money in some way, which is weird because unlike something like an iPhone or something that has an ecosystem behind it where you can just pay more into it. Samsung doesn't really have a really great established reason to buy a Samsung phone and then either just only use their Galaxy app store or anything that's integrated into it that where they're going to make the money back. Apple could do this if they wanted to, and then you're buying stuff off iTunes and stuff, they make their money back, right? But with Samsung, I'm like, well, where are they going to get this money back? Because once I get the phone, I can't even get the cases yet, so I'm definitely not going to buy it from them. So where are they making that money back? It's a really interesting business thought proposition.
I feel like by the time they send you the free shipping label, by the time they have to do whatever manufacture, whatever to get it back to sell to someone, wipe it, clean it, I feel like they would probably save money maybe doing that or lose whatever amount of money they would take back and lose the hassle. So I feel like it makes sense in a way. But the problem with a strategy like this is it requires that everyone is always going to have pure intentions. Hey, I like this phone. I have no intention of returning it. The second that Travis told me I could just save $100 on my Fold and I wasn't even planning on returning it, I saved $100 on my Fold and said I was going to return it. Exactly. I'm sorry. The minute you put this out there, I'm a deal guy. I'm just like, ooh, Travis just saved me $100 on my Fold. Of course, you know what? Let me return that. Ooh, I got the same thing once you saw it. I was never going to hit the return button. So it's a good strategy. It makes sense. Man, if Apple did something like this, the word would get out tomorrow. Oh, so and fast. Everyone would be like, let me return my iPhone 12 that I just bought.
But they also don't need to do it. Let's be honest.
What?
They also don't need to do it.
They don't need to do it. And I'd be curious to see, did you order your FE from Samsung?
I did.
You should see if you return it. Is there?
I had considered that. Let me look. Now, I got a better deal for it because I'm trading in my iPhone, so I'm only out like $200 or $300. But let me look. I'll look right now while
you should see if they give you a 10% because you said the wording. So I want to know, is it just for the Fold? And it's like, it's a $2,000 device. It's an experimental one. We want it in people's hands. Or is it more like, they do that for everything, and then you just found the permanent Samsung 10% discount.
I know, right? I'm going to look right now. I'm going to look. I'm not going to return it. For everyone who's listening, this is just to find out what's going on with Samsung. It's for your benefit.
It would be nice, and it would be a cool thing for all these companies to do, especially, companies are preaching this thing like, oh, we're green and stuff like that. If you kept your phone instead of sending it off and doing all the shipping and everything, it would be a more green process. It would be cool if there was some sort of system. I don't know, maybe once every 3 years they'll offer you something like that if you just kept the product. That would be kind of cool, but I don't know how you would implement that because you could just probably make a bunch of different fake accounts and keep ordering and then get your permanent discount.
So technically, because it hasn't arrived yet, the option to return is not there yet, which makes sense, of course.
We'll find out. Next show. We're going to see Travis found
it. Next show, on the one-year anniversary.
So, I guess you're liking your Fold 2.
Yeah, I do dig it now. Until I get a case, which is another whole thing. I got multiple ones on order just waiting for the first one to arrive. I mean, I'm definitely going to talk about that. Let me put that in my notes from my video because that's still annoying. But yeah, I dig it. I don't take it anywhere right now, again, because of the case thing. And when I do, it's not my primary phone for various reasons that I'll probably talk about in my video. But I do like it. And after having it, I love using it. I don't know. And then the real question is, do you end up recommending it? And I think my answer will still be the same as it was before, which is if you have money to burn or if you need to be, on the top of everything, then yeah. If not, no. Why would you do that to yourself? It's cool as hell, but there's nothing practical about this. It's a great productivity device, though. If you are a business person, maybe if you have your own business, this would actually be a really good product, especially with wireless DeX. It becomes your kind of desktop situation as well. So I do like it for that. It is a productivity monster in a lot of ways. So I dig it for that for sure.
How do you use it to be super productive?
I'm not very productive on it. I just... I like, I'm just checking Instagram and Twitter and stuff on it. That's about it. I'm not doing anything else
on it. Well, I ask because I see a lot of people make that argument of like, oh, this is like a super productive device. And I think the thing for me is it's a $2,000 device. You can hurl all the criticisms you want at it. Listen, at the end of the day, the technology is amazing. I don't think you could put any single person on this planet, open this thing up at least for the first 10 minutes and go, whoa, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Unfolding the display, seeing that big display in front of you, it's so cool. I'm so glad I own this phone. It's the coolest phone of the year for sure. That being said, I'm with you. I don't know if it's practical. And I don't know if it's more productive. I've been trying to catalog different use cases with the Fold 2. And, you know, a lot of this is software. The software of third-party apps isn't optimized. Maybe if you open up like a Samsung app, maybe that's a little bit more optimized than opening up just some random app from Google or another Android application. The problem is it's a different aspect ratio. So if your app isn't coded for that aspect ratio, what ends up happening, like if you load up Twitter on it, you're not really getting more Twitter on your screen. The content's kind of blown up. If you have bad eyesight, actually, it's probably a great experience. Yeah. I mean, I'm younger than Travis. My eyesight's pretty good right now. But I don't need my text to be that blown up when I open up Twitter. There's scaling options on the Fold 2, but they really don't do much. It really doesn't shrink down the experience where you could have more of Twitter on this bigger display. So sometimes the bigger display with the Fold 2, it's kind of an illusion. It's kind of going, ooh, look at this big expansive display. But if you hold up your iPhone and you open up Twitter on your iPhone, you open up Twitter on the Fold, you'll realize that you actually get more content on screen on your iPhone. You can read more tweets without scrolling on your iPhone. And this takes place in a lot of different applications. It takes place on the web, especially if you're loading up mobile websites. Some of the desktop websites, you could set it to desktop mode. Some of them don't look good on the Fold. Some of them work fine. I think YouTube's a great example of a desktop site that looks good. Travis is distracting me for the video. He's taking pictures. He's showing all the cool things while I'm trying to hurl my criticisms. But there's things that make it not productive. There's things that make it not a good... I shouldn't say not a good. It's a okay tablet, I would say. An okay tablet when unfolded. And not the best phone. I guess not a good phone when it's folded. It's usable, right? It's not like it's not usable. The screen's big enough. It's a little too narrow for my preferences, but I can make it work. I've learned how to type on it, especially with swipe typing, right? That's probably the best way to go about that. But I feel like right now, it's a bad phone. It's too thick. It's too heavy. And it's an okay tablet. Now, I think most people, when you're talking about recommending devices... It's a cool device. Again, if you're on the bleeding edge, if you have money to spare, if you want to be like me and Travis, and I'm sure that's a big portion of our audience, I think it's actually maybe a slight recommendation because it's not breaking or anything like that. It's a cool device. You can totally make it work as your main phone, I think. The cameras are good on it. But I think most people would probably be better served getting a Galaxy FE and then a tablet. And yeah, maybe it's not in your pocket all the time for the tablet, but an optimized tablet is going to be way more productive than this thing. And the Galaxy FE, I would probably argue, is going to be a way better phone than this thing. You know, there's pros and cons to every device, and that's just the nature of this device. It's a jack of all trades, master of none. You know, it's an okay phone. It's an okay tablet. In the moment, if you're traveling and this was your only device, yeah, that's pretty compelling. That's pretty compelling to have that all into one device. But when the price is more than you would probably spend on just getting a separate phone and a tablet, and if you really consider how often you're using your tablet when you're on the go, and most of us, and that's a big problem that I want to try and emphasize in my review. I don't think many people are on the go really too much now. So I feel like it's a device that's maybe probably not best suited to be reviewed in this current world that we're living in, which isn't, it's not the fault of the device, but it's just something to consider. Again, saying all that, it's a cool phone. The hardware is impressive. The screen unfolding it, super amazing technology. I like it. I like the phone, but I do have a lot of criticisms on it where I feel like I've just seen praise on Twitter of like, this is the best thing ever. Go get one today. And it's like, I don't know. Mm. I think most people wait still wait. This thing is still obviously has ways to go. It's huge improvement over the first one, almost an unbelievable improvement over the first one. With that being said, I still think there's more improvement they can make with this.
Yeah, and I will say that one of the things I am going to talk a lot about in my review is the fact that it's not, to me, it's not a phone. To a lot of the same points you're talking about that I talked about in my 48 hours, it doesn't feel like a phone to me. It feels like something else. It is a next level of communication device because it's less than a phone folded because it's so narrow you can't do the same things. And it's more than a phone unfolded. So to me, this is a different device. I don't consider this a phone. It is not practical as just a phone by itself. Like you wouldn't just buy this, keep it folded the entire time and just use it. That doesn't make any sense. And you wouldn't necessarily use it unfolded all the time either because you can't pocket it. You can't do other things. So it's something else that does what it does pretty darn well. But to say, like, should I buy this or this in an iPad or this in a Tab S7 or whatever is probably smarter than saying, should I buy this or a Note 20?
Yes.
I feel like that is the real question. Even though in my mind, that's still not even like apples to apples, but it's a lot closer. It's a much closer question than the other way.
It is. It's hard because listen, I could go pick up my iPad right now. I can go pick up my laptop Mac. And maybe we serve to a tech audience who has all these things and it's just another device, but there's a broad audience out there who has $2,000 to spend. They don't have $5,000 to spend. And when I think of the use cases of this and I think of, hey, listen, just go out and buy whatever the top of the line flagship phone you want. And you know what? You can go buy this new iPad Air we're about to talk about. Or you can even, you know what? You can go and buy a $1,000 iPad Pro. It's still the same price as this. And if I think, okay, Greg, put yourself in a position of a consumer who's not getting everything at their doorstep. If you could only have two of these devices, would you rather have your iPad and a phone? Or would you rather have this? And for me, I'm taking the phone and the iPad any day of the week right now. It's just, there's things that I could get done on my iPad that I'm not getting done on the Fold 2. Even though it's amazing, even though there's more productive things you can do, multitasking and stuff on the bigger display is nice. You can put things into windows. Even though I can do all that on the Fold 2, I think that's what I would choose. And that's what I would advise most people to choose. And I don't know. That's it.
I think to wrap this up, I think if this was priced differently, it's a different conversation because then you could say, hey, can I sacrifice enough of the things from a tablet and a phone to, do I get like 90-80% of that experience in this one device than I would over the two for about the same price? Like, that's a different conversation. If this thing gets down into that price point, then you can have that argument. You could say, well, you know, I could get a high-end flagship phone and a tablet, or I could get this and they're about the same price and you're good to go. But since they're not, now you're implying that this is better because it's more expensive. You can't do the open, close, hey on the iPad unless you're Lou. I don't know what he's talking about. What is Renee talking about? The open and close, hey on an iPad unless you're Lou. Well, you can close, not really open. What is he talking about? The open and close, hey. What does that mean? I don't know what he's talking about.
That is, I think, is it Bored at Work who does that and does the open and close?
I don't know.
I
don't
know. You haven't been on Twitter. I don't know.
Dagnabbit, I don't know. I'm so out of touch. I don't know. I only watch certain people on YouTube. And the rest of it's not even tech. All right. So what do we have to wrap up this not quite 10th anniversary or first anniversary? We could give our favorite thoughts of some of the favorite episodes we have too.
We should talk about some of them. Before we move on, I will just say, going back to the duo real quick. I will say though, it is one of the most, like, again, I said it was the coolest phone. I feel like phones are very exciting with like the Wing, and there's going to be maybe the more conservative phones that you probably should pick up. But as someone who like reviews this stuff, it's very fascinating to see all these new phones when for a while it was just kind of like the slab phone you pick up, whatever. Maybe that's still the right choice and none of these really work out. But I will say it's very exciting, which I like. I like the new technology. I want to see the third fold. I see people talking about the Duo in the chat. Don't buy the Duo. I'm telling you, it's not good. The Fold 2, I can make the argument, go buy it. I can't make that argument for the Duo. It is not good.
And Michael Fisher just tweeted about the Duo, and he says that he actually kind of prefers it over the Fold for a couple of reasons, mainly the size and the fact that it's a lot thinner and smaller and easier to take with you and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that in that way, he likes it better.
I said this from the start. The Duo is amazing hardware. It is thinner than the Fold. It is kind of nicer to take with you. The software experience on it is really bad. And I'm just going to say, if this is your one device to rule them all, right? Like we said, this is your one device. You take it everywhere with you. Listen, you do not want to use that camera on the Duo. Like, I don't see most people gravitating towards it. Maybe you don't take pictures. Everyone has different needs. But I'm just telling you, I could not make that phone my main... That phone I got to review, I didn't like it, and I just returned it. Like, I was just like, I was so bummed out about it. Like, I couldn't even muster any energy to make a video on it. Like, that's how bad it was for me. Damn. Like, I was like, I'm returning this, whatever. That's it. I just don't want to, it's not a finished product. Don't buy it. Like, my review would just be like, don't buy this. Thank you. All right.
Yeah, what else?
So, I don't know. iPad Air, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I watched the video you made about the difference between that and the Pro, which was really good because that's a great question. It's like, at one point, I'm so compelled by the color alone that it makes me want it just because a colored iPad with an iPad Pro look is so compelling to me, even though I'll probably put in a case and never see that damn color anyway. But I really want like that blue or that green iPad. I'm like, I want it so bad. I just wish it was like $100 less, but I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Some of the things you brought up, obviously no 120 Hertz, which is fine. No touch ID, no face ID, which is like, I mean, all right. The USB-C bandwidth issue, which is interesting. I would love to test that. I'm really interested to see how that works out and if that really in real world usage is even a thing, like if it even matters.
You might not even have a device that transfers at those speeds.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious about that. Having said that, like, it's still a compelling device. So I mean, with the one of the best processors out there right now and just a damn good like look, it looks pretty good.
I think it's good. I think my main takeaway from that was that the Pro just needs to get better at this point. Obviously, I think they probably would have wanted an update, whatever. They don't have it ready. There's rumors maybe by the end of this year, early 2021. I think by the next time the Pros update it, it'll be a better distinction. I just feel like, again, I don't have this device. I really can't tell you. Maybe by the end of it, I'll go, you know what, just go get a Pro. I just feel like the Air right now, if you're deciding between an 11-inch iPad Pro and an 11-inch Air, I think the main takeaway from my video is like, if you draw a lot, I think the 120 Hertz will help you out with that Apple Pencil. But other than that, like, I feel like I would go for the Air if it was me. And the storage too. The Air maxed out in 256. So that's all I need for my iPad right now. Maybe someone needs 512 and then I guess you're kind of defaulted. But I kind of told people if you're in the market for a Pro, and I don't normally advise this. I don't normally go, ooh, there's rumors. Like, wait, like that's not me. I'm usually like, just buy the device you need. I feel like it's going to be sooner than later. Like, I feel like you should wait if you're going to be in the market for a Pro, if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we were disappointed with the Pro from this year anyway.
Yes.
I already feel kind of not bamboozled, but it's like we knew what we got when we got it. But I was just hoping for something even better. But we'll see. Hey, a 14X would be legit.
I did another video the other day, very last minute. They leaked the Geekbench scores for the new iPad. And let me tell you, that's impressive. And I know it's just a benchmark, it's just numbers. But that thing's faster single core performance than like any Mac that Apple sells. The multi-core is almost up there with the iPad Pro. As I was correct in my video, the iPad Pro is still stronger. It still has two extra processors. But when you see that A14X or whatever they got cooking for the pros, I don't even know how I don't even know how Intel or AMD, I don't know how they're going to compete for mobile processors. I just don't know. Like, it's going to be, unless Qualcomm can kind of get their butts in gear and make like competent mobile chips to sell to like Windows vendors. Like, Apple might have a situation where this hasn't happened in a very long time, where you go to the store and for the most part nowadays, you get to choose between an Intel machine. AMD's doing great in desktops. They're kind of coming up in laptops too, not necessarily as good as Intel, especially with power management, but they're getting there. But it's basically, especially for laptops, you go in and you have a Windows laptop and a Mac laptop. They both have the same Intel processor and you're kind of choosing between software. Especially as a creator, I know it's a smaller audience or whatever you want to call us. I feel like there might be, you go into the store and it's like, here's the Mac. It's the fastest computer you can buy, or you can get Windows. And I feel like just based on what I see, what the iPad Pro can do and how fast that can render video, a slim tablet, no fans cooling it, my mind goes wild thinking about the performance gains that they could get if they put that into an actual computer. I don't know.
Like, it's weird that a company that wasn't really making processors anywhere near as long as Intel and AMD could randomly come out of nowhere in just a couple of years and start eating their lunch. It is the weirdest, like, most disruptive thing that almost doesn't make sense. But we'll see. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they can be optimized for their own software, so that's one thing. But a Geekbench score, which again is kind of this,
yeah,
like try to get the high, like, does it really mean anything? Yes and no. But the fact that it even is doing this is incredible.
Yeah, it's just a reference point to kind of see theoretically the machines against each other. Yeah, Renee's right. The metal scores, which are the graphics scores, are high too. There's rumors that Apple's going to make an A14 Apple TV that they might try and go heavy into gaming, maybe making their own controller. You know, an Apple TV with an A14 would be more graphically powerful than a Switch, not necessarily a PS5 or an Xbox, but that's all it needs. And if Apple could develop a strategy where you have good gaming titles, they need to really invest in software, which I don't think they have the energy to do, honestly, and the focus to do. I'd love to be proven wrong. I just feel like Apple and gaming, it's more of a casual audience. I would love to see them invest into AAA games. But you have an Apple TV that's $200, a really good gaming controller, and then you tell me every game that I get on my Apple TV will also run on my iPhone and my iPad. And it has a good cloud saving system so that when I play on my Apple TV, I take my phone, it just takes me right where I was. They could actually compete, which is a weird thing to say, because Apple and gaming, it never really, I mean, mobile gaming is bigger, right? It makes more money. It's not the AAA games that, for lack of a better term, hardcore gamers want. Apple could maybe compete in that space, which is something you wouldn't even think about a year or two ago.
It is a very compelling conversation, which we, of course, will continue next week on the one-year anniversary of GadgetCast, which we just realized before we started this episode of GadgetCast, and where we hope to have guests. Oh, I mean,
yeah. If you want to be on GadgetCast, DM me or Travis on Twitter. Email the show, I guess. I don't know. We'll check all outlets of communication. Also, if you are a fan of GadgetCast, it's a one-year anniversary. You know we have the voicemails. You know we have email. If you're a fan of GadgetCast, you know we have the reviews on even like Apple Podcasts. If you're a fan, why don't you communicate with us some way? Let us know how much you like the show, because honestly, if we don't get enough fan feedback, I might consider canceling the whole show.
Exactly.
So, you know, I want to be praised. I want to be loved. And
we want that. And by the way, in looking at the numbers we were talking about before, we have a much larger audience on audio than we do video. So we don't get to see you in the chat.
Yes.
We want to know more about you. There's so many more of you on audio that we would love to know more about. So leave us there's a video. I think there's a link for email in the show notes and then all the things. So just reach out to us. Leave us
email,
leave us some
voicemail. Yeah. Listen, I want so many voicemails that I can't play every one of them on the show. I want to go, Travis, there's too many. I can't play them all. I'm sorry, Dan in Ohio. We couldn't get to you this time. Maybe next show. So
that works. All right. Well, listen, if you are interested in being here live next week, it's youtube.com/gadgetcast. All the links are in the description in the show notes. So just, you know, follow us on Twitter and Instagram and all the other things. But we'll be here next week. Everyone who's in the chat, Aftercast is going to be very, very short. But next week, we're coming back for 1 year, baby. Let's go. We'll see you. He's Greg. I'm Travis's Gadgetcast.